Well, good evening. We welcome you tonight to this first session on the Money Master Seminar. And the reason why we want to call it the Money Master Seminar is simply because we have an obligation to look after our money and to manage it in an effective way. A lot of people don't believe that money management is important. What they really think is that if they wing it and come out on the top of the pile, they've done well. What happens often is most people end up at the bottom of the pile with nothing to show for. So it's a strategies course of stewardship management to retain purchasing power of the money in hand. And that's very, very important. It's to retain purchasing power. You would be surprised how many people would maintain purchasing power if they really scrutinized what was in their pocket versus to what they thought was in their pocket. And if they really scrutinized what significant opportunities they had, if they managed it properly instead of just letting it go. So it's contrasted against the speculative money investment for the increase of wealth. And one of the things that we could do tonight if we really wanted to is I could give you a number of books to read on the idea of increasing wealth. And in the world, 95 to 97% of the people are out there for the simplistic purpose of increasing their wealth, thinking that the more they have, the more solid and stable they'll become. That is the biggest deception going, as is demonstrated throughout the present recourse of history at the moment. Deanna was telling me that over 59% of the people in British Columbia live from paycheck to paycheck. And in tonight's news, it was said that there's 23,000 people or more going to the food bank. And it's simply because they are projected towards gaining wealth on speculative money investment rather than purchasing and maintaining purchasing power. So it's an 11-week seminar to empower you to put money in your pocket rather than wastefully giving it to others. Now, one of my theses is this, that people often wonder why others get wealthy and why they get ahead in life and why we ourselves often don't get ahead or don't get wealthy. Well, one of the things that we often do, in my opinion, is this. We support the wealth of others by spending frivolously and carelessly and erratically. And that's why they get wealthy, because we are seduced into believing that we have an obligation to buy their product to ensure that their lifestyle is going to be the affordable lifestyle to which by now they should have become accustomed. The irony, however, is that when we do that, we dissolve ourselves of the same capacity to manage our finances, not to gain wealth, but to have a substantive monetary base by which we can live out our life in honor to both God and to ourselves. So we want to teach you how to empower yourself to put money in your pocket rather than wastefully giving it to others. And of course, the only way that we can do this is because of a biblical worldview and common sense financial management that's been tested for over 45 years in my life. When I was a boy, I learned some of these. I studied some of these at university. I did research. I taught some of these in other areas of BC and the United States. And even today, I'm finding these strategies to be very, very practical and important. The choice is yours. You can either live a life of financial terror, or you can live one of financial stability. There are a lot of people at the end of the month that are in financial terror. And they're doing the numbers game, how to rob from Peter to pay Paul. And when they paid Paul, they have to go back and look at Peter in the eye and say, I'm sorry, this month I can't quite cover my debt for you, Peter, so we'll just maximize it out. Terror is one of the worst things to have to live for when the end of the month comes. Terror. Can you imagine knowing that you've had money in your pocket all throughout the month to cover the bills, but because of no management strategies, you end up... I only had it happen once to me in 1972 when I broke my hip and my new house had to have its first mortgage payment and I couldn't get welfare. Fortunately, we came across a resource to help us pay the first mortgage payment on our home. You can live in financial stability and freedom. I don't know if you believe that. And you do not have to fret throughout any day of the month when this course is finished. It is possible, it is plausible, and it is probable that you will succeed financially if you do this. Possible means that it is within the grasp to maintain a financial management course of conduct that will give you resources at the end of the month. It is plausible. And the reason why we know it's plausible is because this course has been tested by many other individuals that I know, and they have come to a solid end. It is probable for this simple reason. Every individual that I've given this manual to and other instructions to, and if they follow through weekly by weekly by weekly what I tell them to do, at the end of the week, they come back with their piggy bank with extra cash in it. Now, during the break, we're going to give you piggy banks. And these piggy banks are going to be very, very significant for the course. And what's going to happen with these piggy banks is that as I give you strategies to save money, as you save the money that you save, you're going to put it in the piggy bank every week. For example, when I say to you that you can go to Tim Hortons and get a coffee and a muffin for $2.48, or you can go to McDonald's and get a coffee and a muffin for $1.47, you will take the $1.01 you save and put it in the piggy bank. And if I tell you that you can go to Walmart and pick up a DV disc for $5 rather than paying $29.95, you will take the $24 extra and put it in the piggy bank and save that money. And if I tell you that you can go to the Real Canadian Store and buy butter for $2.12 a pound instead of paying $3.38, you put the extra money, and on the 11th week, you'll bring your money back, and that will be your money to spend however you want at the end of the course, the excess money. And I think that some of us will have over $200 excess to spend on exactly what we want. If you choose to live out the principle of life stewardship taught through Scripture and the people of God. The fundamental thesis of the course is this. The recourse to financial management is honoring yourself as a steward of the resources or the money you have within your pocket. A steward, nothing else. You do not have entitlement to gain wealth. You do not have entitlement to have money in your pocket. You do not have entitlement to live the lifestyle to which you should feel accustomed. You do not have any of those other entitlements except to be a good steward of the money that you have as taught in Scripture and the people of God. Now, why is it principled to go by the Scripture? Well, other systems are flawed because they bring us to a point of self-reliance. That as we live, we have no objective and external guide by which to live our life. So we get entrapped in ourselves as being self-reliant to manage our own affairs according to our own principled life that we have either adapted to or adopted as the guiding principle. One of the basic problems is this, that if you continue to think like you've always thought, you're going to continue to get what you've always got. So if you start with the premise that the money is yours because you've worked hard for it, the money is yours because not only have you worked hard for it, you saved a little bit and put it in your pocket, and so now you can do whatever you want with it, then self-reliance comes out. And then it's flawed because often we seek out self-fulfillment through self-devised management systems. Have you ever got up in the morning knowing full well that you've got bacon and eggs on the table, and you've got cream and sugar in the coffee, and you've got all the amenities at home, and all of a sudden you wake up and you say, well, I deserve it. I'm going out for continental breakfast. Or driving down the road, all of a sudden you see a brand new Lotus sitting on the road, or a Ferrari. And I'm driving down the road, and I think to myself, I've been driving Sunfires, I've been driving HHRs, I've been driving cheap Pontiacs and Chevs and Fords all my life. I'm now 60 years of age, going on to 65. Certainly I must be entitled to drive a Lotus at least once in my life. So I'll just drop in and pick one up. Have you ever felt that way? The idea of self-fulfillment through self-devised management systems? Here's a story that will make you laugh. About 15 years ago, I was sitting in a restaurant in Langley, across from the Surrey Credit Union where I used to deal. While I was sitting there, a young man that I taught school came walking in and he sat down with me. And he said, Mr. Nessimer, he said, you and I have been good friends for a number of years. I knew his parents. We had gone to church together. He had just gone out and bought an IROC, or a similar to a Corvette. And he had paid $38,000 for this car, and he had paid on a bank draft, a promissory bank draft. the banknote was due in 4 days, and he was not quite yet able to make his first payment of just over $1,500. So he sat down with me, and I bought him a coffee, and I said, "Chuck, how are you doing today?" "Well," he said, "I'm just doing great." And I said, "How great are you doing?" He said, "I'm doing all right." And I said, "Well, you've moved from being just great to being all right. How do you feel about now?" And he said, "I'm in a real, real bind." I said, "A bind?" I said, "You're young, you've gone to college, you've got lots of brains, and you're driving a nice car." I said, "What's the problem?" And I knew what it was already. He said, "My car payment is due, and it's now about $1,500, and I can't quite make the payment. I was wondering if you would mind helping me out." I said, "You're exactly the individual that I hope was coming my way. I'm going to help you out." He said, "You will?" And I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "You mean you'll go to the bank with me?" I said, "You're right on. We're going to go to the bank together." And so he and I got up after having a coffee and a muffin, walked across the street to the Surrey Credit Union, and I asked if I could see the manager, who I knew, and we sat down, and I said, "I want to help my friend Chuck out." And we talked for about 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and the manager said, "Well, Gordon, the payment is due now." I said, "I know it's due now." He said, "Do you mean that you're going to pay the $1,500? And I said, "No, I'm not." He said, "Well, how are you going to help Chuck out?" I said, "Well, I'm going to help Chuck become encouraged to put the keys of his car on the table and pay a $400 liability rather than losing the car, the $1,500 he's going to owe me, and his future credit for the next 25 years. And he said, but I didn't come over here to do that. And I said, "I know that, but you invited me to come over to help you. And that's how I'm going to help you, by getting rid of the car, getting rid of the $1,500 payment, and getting rid of the future debts." And so, self-fulfillment through self-devised plans. And in most cases, the other systems lead us to a ruinous end. Not always, because sometimes we can bail ourselves out. But what they do, if they do not leave us with a ruinous end, is they always leave us with some type of a guilt complex or a shame complex that we erred somewhere on the plan to be financially successful. And what happens eventually is that those people that err in that system, they always fret, "What's going to be my next loss?" So it's time to look beyond making that wad of money. I like money. I like the color of money. In fact, I like blue and orange and brown and the rest of it. I like the and red. I like it all, Deanna. Yes, I like the coins too. And I like your money, my money, their money, and whatever other money. But it's time to move beyond making that wad of money to wisely managing every penny we presently have in hand. The significant matter is this, that at the moment in my pocket I have about $1.45. I can whimsically say that the $1.45 is virtually nothing towards my future gain. But if I take that $1.47 and go and waste it for no significant realization, then I have become the bigger fool than he that has no money at all. Because he that has no money at all is not able to make a decision that prejudices himself towards guilt, shame, and total rebellious management systems. We want to start now by this philosophy of the Money Master Seminar. Now, how does the seminar work? First of all, you all have got this manual in your hand. And this is the introduction manual, and this will cover some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about. It's got 30 pages in it, and every week you will get another 10 or 20 pages that will go along with it. The manual itself costs $15, and it is strategically based upon a book that I've been working on for the last 15 years, and the masterpiece is already ready to go to publications. But this is what it's all about. And then, as I said, you will all get a wooden piggy bank by which you will be principally responsible for managing your money and setting aside the capital residue that you save. The third principle that is very, very important is that if you attend this seminar, you should attend all 11 seminars. If you skip any of the 11 seminars, then the combination wealth of the things that you will gain on money management will be fragmented, and it will not piece together. The seminars will last from 7 o'clock to 8:45. We will have a 15-minute coffee break at around 8 o'clock, and so it will move along quite fast. The one thing that is very, very significant is that if you have any questions, every 15 minutes I will stop and I will say, have you any questions about what we're discussing? If you have questions, that's very significant. If you have additional comments that you want to make, you could write them out and then give them to me and I will look at them. It is very difficult to stop and discuss things further because it is a progressive seminar and we will eventually come to some of those things that you might be suggesting. The Money Master Seminar then is developing sound, practical, and beneficial fiscal management strategies towards retaining present finances for a good end instead of mismanaging them to a ruinous end. Everyone starts their life at point zero. We all start coming into the world with nothing, and we all end it at exactly the same door, with nothing. If that is a principle that we all accept as a value setting, then we need to ask our basic question, what is the flux from birth to death financially? Well, it's quite remarkable, to say the least. But before we discuss that, let's just examine what the seminar is all about and why we're doing this seminar. It's very, very important for you to understand that I didn't develop the seminar to be in competition with anyone else. I developed it simply because I thought it was time for me to express in a simple terms a help message to those that cannot manage their affairs on their own. So it's not going to condemn anyone for the present lifestyle they live. We need to understand that you did not come here to have a lot of heaping of condemnation for being rich or poor or not being able to manage your money. What it is, it's a simple instruction manual and course by which we want to edify you to good works, to rectifying some of the problems you have in your money management systems so that you can see a progressional better end. So no one is going to be condemned for not being able to manage their money. It's not going to be a marketing slam either, where we start marketing slams against certain companies that are asking you to buy their product and where you get roped in. In fact, we're going to commend a number of products to you and companies that you should be working with to help yourself succeed. And then it's not going to be a methodology for keeping up with friends or the Joneses. One of the things that I keep on thinking to myself is this. Everyone has a normative, what they call a sufficiency quotient, where the Jones here may have decided that they need that motorhome and that boat and that Lotus and the big 24-story home and all the rest of it. And that may be their quotient for status here. And then you might believe that wearing clothes from the Sally Ann and driving a 12-year-old car and living in a basement suite is sufficient enough. The quotient that we set for ourselves is not ever determined by comparative analysis because we're all individuals, right? So, there's not going to be a guilt trip because you're not up with the Joneses. You're not up with the man on 152nd Street that just built this brand new home with four garages. And at the end of the fourth garage, he's got a motorhome garage where he can now drive his motorhome in. He's got a 25-acre place where he's got all new roads being put in for his family and friends to build their homes. You're not going to be measured by that. It's not going to be a promotion by which we become wealthy financially. If you want to become wealthy financially, I'm sorry, you've come to the wrong place. I'm not interested in making you wealthy financially because I already know the dangers of financial wealth. My father, at one time, was the owner of Royal City Cabs. He owned a meat cutting shop at the same time. We owned the Pacific Restaurant in New Westminster, and we also owned another restaurant in New Westminster. Plus, we owned a square mile of property in Surrey, and I took the bus back and forth to school, and we lived a life of opulence, and I want to say it was fun. But I want to warn you that if you think wealthy lifestyles are great, I want to let you know that there's also the pitfall of also losing everything and coming to a sad waken end, that wealth does not give happiness at all. And I told the people of the church one time, I stood by a man who lost $6 million in 1 hour. And I was at his place standing by him on December the 26th, 1978, when the sheriff came, locked up his multi-million dollar home with a pool and with a tennis court, with motorhomes and with everything you could imagine, and he walked away flat broke. He lost everything, including $6 million in 1 hour. And it's not going to be a resource for business propositions for immediate or future gains. And then it's not going to be a cure-all for all financial woes, commitments, or obligations. The course may redirect you as how to handle some of these obligations and woes, but it's not going to be the cure-all. And one of the things that I really, really understand about these kind of courses is this, that often we hear propositions of individuals saying, if you come to my course, you will end up with so many thousands of dollars within your pocket within a week or two. And then they have these testimonials of people who got involved in real estate deals. And I made $6,000 in 3 days, or I made $45,000 in 2 months. And I'm on my way to $1 million. And they're on the boats and everything else with this guru who supposedly has taught them how to make all the money, when in actual fact, it's all paper money and nothing credible at all. So it's not a cure-all. And it's not going to be a conjecture regarding entitlement. I find that today's generation really has a difficulty about entitlement. That they, because they live in Canada with a present economic strata of affluence that seems to be normative for the country, and their parents are now in retirement getting pensions and have a little bit of resource left over, that they now have become entitled to share in the benefits of the parents, regardless how little or how unwilling they are to work to the same good end. The present problem of entitlement often brings people into a sense of utility of others. So, mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters become utility for individuals' personal gain. Not always, but sometimes it does happen. Then what is the course all about? Well, we want to consider the value of money, and we want to discuss the purpose of finances, and we want to discuss a stewardship program that will allow us to get ahead with our obligations. It is a responsible, accountable family team management approach of financial resources, so that when we become responsibly accountable, we look after what needs to be spent rather than what we want to spend on. And I don't know if you know the four things that you must always pay first. Well, the very first four things that you always pay, of course, if you're born again, you always give on the first day of the week that of which the Lord has given you, a portion of a blessing back to his body. The second thing that you always pay first is your mortgage or your rent. You always guarantee that you have a place of covering for your head and a place of sleep. The next thing that you always pay for is your food. You make sure that you have food for your stomach so that you're not going to the Salvation Army or any other place out of dire necessity because of mismanagement. And then the next thing that you pay for after those three things is you make sure that you have adequate clothing so that you are covered and protected. And then in Canada, the fifth thing that we pay for, of course, is we always try and have transportation. And the transportation is suitable to the lifestyle that is practical to our personhood. Our transportation is always an affirmation or equal to our lifestyle of personhood. There are some people here that are very, very charismatic, very, very outgoing, and so they look to buy, like John did, a convertible. There are other people here that are very, very withdrawn and very, very precluded to quietness of life, and their personhood would say, no, I'm going to go out and buy a Honda Civic, and that's going to be my car. And there's nothing wrong with a Honda Civic, and there's nothing wrong with the Chrysler product that John bought. Now, Don and I are conservative people, middle-of-the-road individuals with a balanced life, and so we bought an HHR because it's right down the road, right? It's a four-cylinder with four tires that go in the same direction that get us from point A to point B, and that's good enough for us. And so your personhood will determine what kind of a car you might buy. I've never bought a convertible, and I'm not ready to do it yet. And so then it's a prioritizing of financial expenditures, obligations based upon godly and biblical instruction, a prioritizing of financial expenditures, obligations based upon godly biblical instruction. I can't emphasize that enough, that as stewards, we need to prioritize. We list a prioritizing. And as I said, first of all, a gift back to God. Then we pay our mortgage or our rent. Then we pay our food. And then we pay our clothing. And then we pay our transportation. And everything else in my economy is nothing more than superfluous amenities that I really don't need. And then the last thing, it's an expression of gratitude for having the finances and the financial resources we possess to meet our financial commitments as we pay our bills. No longer will paying our hydro, our taxes, our medical premiums be a tedious, laborious demand. Rather, they will become a praiseworthy facet of daily living. As you manage your affairs, it becomes an expression of gratitude that you do have the $1.47 to buy that cup of coffee, or you do have the $147 to pay the hydro, or you do have the $212 to pay the car payment or whatever, right? Well, you may not know this, that it's suggested that most Canadians will earn approximately $3.7 million before paying any expenses if they work 40 hours a week from the age of 22 to the age of 65 without missing any spacious work time. So they will earn, just by going to work, the average is $3.7 million. If as many Canadians do, they bank away an RRSP and they receive Canada and Old Age Security Pension or the supplement, or if they inherit from wills, or if they should win a lottery, they could maximize out at approximately $4.7 million in their lifetime. $4.7 million. The work life of most individuals will be anywhere between 37 to 43 years. And so that's what you have the possibility of handling in your hand, up to $4.7 million. Wow. Isn't that a lot of money? So that sounds great, but here's the problem. 95% of these Canadians will not manage their resources, and upon their death, they will not have adequate finances to demonstrate that they possessed caring dignity by paying for their own funeral as they should. I've done a number of funerals, and I can tell you, of over the 27 funerals that I've done, I've only been paid for doing two of them. And in most cases, the people have come to me and saying, "Pastor, would you mind not being paid for this funeral? We're short money." In one situation, I did a funeral not too long ago where Martha and I actually paid half the funeral expenses because the couple could not pay the funeral and there was nothing left for them. And then in Port Hardy one time for a lady, it was quite interesting. I just met the aunt to the lady. The family's name was Humshed. And just recently I met the aunt, as I said. Her name was Sonia Humshed. And in 1972, I did a funeral in Port Hardy for Susan Humshed. And her body had to be shipped from Vancouver to Port Hardy on the bus. And the family asked if I could pay the shipment of the cost of the body because they did not have enough resources to pay for the shipment and the native community was going to pay for the burial. So it's true that 95% of Canadians do not manage their affairs well enough to have resources. And then there's an article here that I'm just going to read to you from The Golden Years by Barry Sanderson, found in the RV Gazette. Ah, yes, the golden years. Dream up visions of endless days or enjoying the grandkids. But what do we really have to look forward to without the one commodity that will distinguish us from being old or elderly? That, my friends, is money. Remember when the kids were growing up, we did not have a care in the world because we never thought that those senior years would creep on us? Well, here we are. And our lives, for those who did not plan ahead, are days watching our friends spend their winters in Florida and us working part-time jobs because our pensions from the government just won't cut the mustard. I'm talking about the new retirees, generation to come, and not the pre-generation of retirees now living. Us present retirees knew the phrase, "A penny saved is a penny earned." Save something for a rainy day. The buck stops here. Life is only as good as you make it. That's why 80% of my clients over 65 vacation out of country in the winter, and 80% of the next generation of retirees will scrape by. So what happened? I am sure that many of you could tell me, but here are a few reasons I think it went sour. Children growing up in the 70s and 80s had everything handed to them free with no work ethic. Hence, they expect to see a handout later in life as well. Many felt the handover of wealth from the present generation of the retirees will be their retirement nest egg, so they did not have a forced saving plan. The breakdown of the traditional family put a noose around the finances that now had to pay for two households instead of one. And people of the live-for-the-day generation spent every dime or borrowed every dime to satisfy their impulse desires today while neglecting to consider scenarios such as, what if I lose my job or get sick or the gas goes up $1.50 a liter? And I have an article here that's very, very significant as well, and this comes out of the Vancouver Sun. Many students will graduate from post-secondary education with considerable debt and little understanding of debt management, a failing that may explain why Canadian households carry, on average, $1.27 million in debt for every $1 million of disposable income. Students should take the opportunity to learn about managing money while in school. Financial literacy will improve their lives thereafter. And so the concern right now is that there is so much financial illiteracy out there that people just don't know what the recourse is to stay out of debt. And again, my thesis is the recourse is stewardship of your present resources. So the story goes on. Gloom and doom? Well, maybe yes, but we can turn this around. We need to entrench some of the core values of sound financial planning to the next generation, because the wealth that is going to come from the states today to the spenders of the 70s and 80s will soon vanish to pay off the debt that they have foolishly accumulated thus far. And those words are quite hard, aren't they? A lot of generation today, I think, has foolishly accumulated the debt because of the glitter, the glamour, and the glory of the immediacy of purchasing those things that are tantalizing to the eyes and to the ego and to the qualitative peer inclusiveness that they might find by having those things. And so, commonplace today is not having a 27-inch TV in the house. No, why not have a 41 to a 56-inch wall-mounted plasma TV, and you only watch it maybe 1 hour a day? Or instead of having a simple hamburger and pasta salad meal at home on a Saturday night. It seems that 97% of the women today have lost how to cook from Thursday to Sunday night because the restaurants are so full. And the meals are costing anywhere between $19 to $22 per person. And they're just willing to spend instead of manage as stewards, right? And so we come back to the thesis then. We all start out with a resource base called money. And we all end up with a stewardship responsibility of accountability that gives us an affirmation that getting ahead, it is possible, plausible, and probable. Now, I just want to say, as we carry on in the next couple minutes, this. Every time I do this money seminar, there are people that come and they say to me that you're an idealist, that you really don't understand what's happening in our home. Well, I'm just going to share what happened in my life, and then I'm going to let you see the reasonableness of this. For 8 years, I lived in foster homes, and I got $4 a month for my allowance, plus $4 put away. But when I left that foster home, after all the years of putting $4 aside, but I had nothing, absolutely nothing, left over. Now, one of the things that I resolved quickly within my mind after I left the foster home was this, that I would get a job and that I would put aside every penny that I received, and then out of that money I would draw the essential base that I needed. It now came time that I was getting married and I wanted to buy a house for $24,900. I got married, I bought this house, and eventually I had 4 children. And I want to let you know that while I was married with 4 children, I banked 1/4 of my income. I banked 1/4 of my income. And I lived a very fruitful life. I owned a house. I owned brand new cars. I owned a truck and a camper. I owned boats. I had brand new furniture. I went wherever I wanted. I went whenever I wanted. And I did whatever I wanted. but I've banked one quarter of my income. Now, why would I be able, having a debt of a mortgage and all these other things, why would I be able to manage my money? I used to hear whispers from other young people in the church that they were buying bigger homes, that they were buying basement homes, that they were buying new cars. And I had one little quirk back to them. It was this: I'm willing to do exactly the same as you are if you're willing to pay the bills that I incur when I can't do them. I'm willing to do exactly as you're willing to do if you're willing to pay the bills that I need to pay when I can't. Even as you have a responsibility to manage your affairs, it's not just because it's honorable and good, but it's a witness that you're able to manage to pay your bills so that you do not come into disgrace and a ruinous end by frivolously speculating that, oh, that bill will pass by too. That one will pass by too. They always have to be paid. So instead of getting lassoed into the trap of the glitter and the glamour of the glory, I recommend to people that they get encouraged or enwrapped around the confident concept that I owe nothing to anybody because I haven't taken the risk of debt. Don and I spend money, or at least I do. But the Visa is always paid. We bought the new car, we paid it off. We have our motorhome, it's paid off. Everything that we have is paid off. And not because we can always afford it, but we pay it off simply because of this. Nobody can force us to go into debt. Nobody can force us to become stranded financially. We do it ourselves. Every good and perfect gift comes from down from God above, the Bible tells us. But in his giving, he asks us to be stewards. In Matthew 25, we have a sample where three individuals are called by the Lord. And they're called to come because the Lord is going on a trip. And he says to the one, I'm going to give you 5 talents. To the other one, he says, I'm going to give you 2 talents. And to the other one, he says, I'm going to give you 1 talent. And at the end of the day, he's going to come back. They're going to give an accountability of what's happened. He comes back unexpectedly. And the first one has gone out and he's bought a second petroleum company. And in buying the second petroleum company and placing stewards of management responsible back to him and back to the master, they come up and they have 10 oil manufacturing companies. And the second one to whom he gave 2 went out and bought 2 Tim Hortons. And he came back and there was 4 of them, all on titty corner, one to another. The 4 of them all together. And they were all doing very, very well. Because the man not only sold Tim Hortons coffee, he also sold those fantastic cream puff, banana cream pies, and so on. But the one man thought to himself, yes, the master has given me 1 talent. It's not very, very much, and it's not very, very significant. It's just 1 talent compared to the other ones that got 5 and 2. And what I'm going to do, because it's so insignificant to me, I'm going to go and bury it. And when the master comes back, I'm going to use the excuse that I was afraid that he was a hard taskmaster, and I'm going to tell him I did nothing with it. And so the master comes back, and he looks at him and he says, Lord, you gave me 5, and here are 10. And the master says, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. And the other one comes forward with a 2, and he's got 4. And the master says, saying, well done, O good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. The last one with 1 talent comes up, and he says to the master, Lord, I knew that thou was a hard taskmaster, demanding much return. But I was afraid, and I was ashamed, and I hid it. And hence I have only got the 1 left. And the master said to him, take even the 1 from him and give it to the one that has got 10 and cast this man out. And the reason why he was cast out was not because he only had the 1, but because he hid and he buried it. And he did not see the potential profit in the management skill of even 1. It doesn't matter how much you've got or how little you've got. If you've got a start, you have an obligation to manage it well. And then the whole significant element of money management is this. In money management, we build stature and fame within our community towards both God, as we adore Him for every good and gift that He's entrusted us, and towards our community as we build integrity and credibility for paying our bills on time, at the time, for the time of due. Amen? Now, here's something you need to consider. Every time we have money in our pocket, we say to ourselves, the question is this: the money that I have here has got a purchasing power of about, $3, $3.75. So I've got a purchasing power of $3.75. And the question that we need to continuously ask with the $3.75 is this: what is the most prudent, what is the most responsible, what is the most beneficial, and what is the most credible method of handling this money? So first of all, what is the most prudent? Is it prudent to keep the money in my pocket and walk around with $3.75 or $1 million in my back pocket or bank drafts of $10,000 all over my back and walk around with the idea, I'm quite clear because I've got $3.72 in my pocket? That is not prudent, because the money in your pocket has no value unless you recognize that it has purchasing power. Purchasing power. So, first thing I want to say to you is, do not get entrapped by having money in and of itself give you full meaning for life. That's not prudent, because you are not a human doing. You are a human being with potential beyond your money. The next thing that you have to ask yourself is, not only is it prudent, but you have to ask yourself, as I said before, is it stewardship and responsible stewardship to take the money and spend it? Well, let's just say, I know that I've got $3.75, and I know that tomorrow morning I have to meet with Percy Giesbrecht for coffee. And I know that I should have enough money to buy myself a coffee and Percy Giesbrecht for coffee. But if I go and spend this money and have no money in my pocket when I get there, was that stewardship? No. So money in our pocket always witnesses to, instead of spending immediately, we wait for a better good end. A better good end. So, I know that I could go out right now and I could buy an ice cream bar for about $1.35 or so, whatever, and I could go and meet Percy tomorrow with $1.05 and not be able to buy himself or myself a coffee and obligate him to buy my coffee. But I'm going to keep this money so I can buy Percy a coffee, because it's stewardship towards credibility. And then the third thing that you have to remember is, suppose I go to see Percy tomorrow. And suppose as I sit down to see Percy, Percy says to me, well, I've decided I want to buy you coffee. This $3.75 has now taken on a different focus. No longer is it prudent just to stuff it in my pocket. No longer is it stewardship to try and give it to him. But there is a credibility to bless him by saying, well, look, why not let me bless you anyhow to help you? Because with blessing, I will bless, with it bless you, and cursing, I will curse, with it curse you. We need to learn that money has a value not only for ourselves, but an extended value as we bless others, right? And that now gives money a detachment from personhood to personhood. And here's a story, and I'm going to take questions, I'm going to have coffee. There's a man here that lives next to Ted Stoll. He has a carpeting company. I don't know what his name is, but Al is his name. In 1970, I was in a restaurant, and he was sitting at a table by himself, and I was sitting at a table by myself. I went up to him, and I said, young man, there's no need for us to sit by ourselves. Why don't you come to my table and have lunch with me? I'll buy it for you. I bought him a lunch for $9.47 at Night and Day Restaurant on Low Heat and Boundary. We talked. I found out that he was having a problem drinking at one time, and that his business was not doing well. He found out that I was a printer. I never saw him for a year and a half, and by the Holy Spirit, I felt led to go into the same restaurant. Found him downstairs, and he ordered 200,000 fires because I blessed him with a lunch for $11. Now, did I bless him because I wanted 200,000 fires?
No, I blessed him because of his human dignity and his human worth. And out of that blessing that I gave to him, the blessing returned to me. So, godliness plus contentment now opens the door to future promises. And that's a biblical construct that we're going to look after when we come back after coffee.
And we diligently plan so that everything comes to a profitable end. Again,
if you want people to speak well of you, speak well of your God, and how he provides by taking care of the things that you have, and the Lord will bless and bless and bless and bless. I found that if I look after things, people are willing to give me more than if I hand them in a disastrous situation. Amen? And God will help you to do that too.